operated by or developed by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. And it was then brought to Parliament, and as a committee we published this for public comments. We still have to rerun that process because there were very few comments for very obvious reasons that generally in the public domain there's a lot of either there's a lot of drought or not much interest on matters international generally. So it's only some specialized individuals and specialized organizations that would be interested about what is happening where and how it impacts on national interest. So, but we thought we would rerun that process. But the second thing was that because of the things that the bill is raising, because of what the things that the bill is raising, and there are other departments who are also actors in the international environment, such as the trade and industry, they've got the trade attachés, etc., etc. I've got the state security, well, those remains books all the time. Home affairs, public works, public services, etc., etc. And the bill, amongst others, says that there's a need to harmonize an approach that will put a South African perspective, but it also affects the people, but it also affects property. Now, in this way, you are differently affected by the things that the bill says must happen. And that is why we must also hear the department about the things that you have raised, or the things that you are suggesting, or the things that you think are legally not permissible, if I may say so. Or how if there's a legal challenge between two or three departments, how this can be navigated, something like that. So that's why I want to hear you. And for the purpose of today, we have three departments we will allow the Deputy Minister Cronin from the Department of Public Works to make a presentation, and they will also allow him to take leave. He has got his personal health matter to attend to. That's the request he made yesterday. And we spoke to the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, that Home Affairs can then start at 10:30 or just immediately after this. So, and then the next one will be the Department of Public Service and Administration. So these are the three departments for today. And I'm not sure if we should introduce the honorable members. Perhaps we should introduce them for the purpose of today. The lady just behind the honorable Dudley, could you just sit next to Mkhalapo here? You don't want to be a front bencher, whatever that means. Yeah, this is Honorable Dudley, and Honorable Dudley is a member of this committee, Cheryl Dudley. He's serving in this committee from the ACDP, and the lady next to her, Yvonne, gentlemen, the other side is Honorable Stevens Mukhalapa. He's from the DA. He's also a member of this committee. In fact, he's the Shadow Minister of International Relations. So it means if you were to take dieser Brennfläche entscheidet alle anderen Dinge, die wir dann so fahren. Oh, you start with this beer. I'm simple says of Masago. I'm from the ANC and I'm the chairperson of the committee. We informally explained the reason for the delay. That the document was just there are officials of the Department of Public Works that are flying in this morning. So we've had to get the document that the deputy minister is going to use for presentation. But you can also speak to that matter. I'm just explaining the reasons why we have had to delay it. And I want to apologize to the members and apologize to yourselves for the delay. And with that, I then want to invite the deputy minister to make the presentation. Deputy Minister Cronin, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I don't think it's for you to apologize, it's for us to apologize to the committee members and to yourself. As we've explained, basically, we learnt very late of the proceedings today, and I'm sure it's not your fault, I'm sure it's somewhere in our bureaucracy that late. So I only heard yesterday about the Port Fairlie Committee. Unfortunately, as you've explained, I've got I'm undergoing eye surgery issues, minor ones, and so I would, and it's, I need to have a doctor's appointment 12:45. So the 1 o'clock scheduling was problematic for us. And then when I spoke to you informally yesterday, I was under the impression that the staff members from the department would be. But of course, they booked their flight for a 1 o'clock hearing. They have arrived at the airport, but I think that they might find us ahead of them. So we apologize for that. The second thing is also to thank you for inviting us. Ideally, in these matters, differences between ministries and departments should be sorted out prior to coming to Parliament and to the Portfolio Committee. And again, I don't want to point fingers. It could well be that that you know we were in the sense that the Department of Public Works and not being up to speed on the matter. But you know, I was the chair of a portfolio committee for 10 years in Parliament, and I always enjoyed, to be honest, when there were differences amongst departments, because it actually gave Parliament work to do. And I think, you know, and I respect that. I think that Parliament is not just a rubber stamp for the departments. And if there's too much agreement between departments, then there's a kind of pressure on you just to rubber stamp. So we have got some serious concerns about the bill, particularly around Clause 8, and I'll talk to that. Clause 8, but we'll come to the details in a moment. But just to explain, so we've distributed a document which was really a briefing document for me, which has been signed off by my minister as well. And so the actual presentation will be substantially the same thing, but we wouldn't quite have the same format, but so we're not embarrassed to hand it out in its current form. So essentially the first point we want to make is about the background to the interface between the Department of Public Works and our minister, and Durka and the Minister of Foreign Affairs. So that's under Section 2, background there. So in 1999, the then Minister of Public Service and Administration, Dr. Squeer, acting on a recommendation of the Public Service Commission, informed the then Minister of Public Works, who was Jeff Khaderbe, and you can see the quote, and I'll summarize it. There's a function to manage and procure properties and accommodation abroad, I underline abroad, including all aspects of regarding leasing, purchasing, disposal, alterations, and so on, be allocated to the Department of Foreign Affairs, as it was then called, with effect from the 1st of May 1999. Okay. So that marked a shift. So prior to that period, after 1994, but prior to this directive in 1999, the Department of Public Works was the custodian department for embassies, chancelleries, and so forth outside of the country. After some debate and discussion, apparently this was the solution. And then the Minister of Public Service and Administration at that stage went on to say under A, B, and C there, as we quote, that allocating the functions of the Department of Foreign Affairs implies full financial and operational accountability and that final decision-making authority for the function. Okay. Secondly, that the Department of Public Works and Foreign Affairs arrange, if necessary, among themselves for the possible transfer of posts and personnel to the latter department. So where we had maintenance staff and so on, the advice was that there obviously there should be a streamlining, and C makes much the same point, that as much as possible there shouldn't be a duplication of costs and staff in terms of the custodial function in the properties outside the country being used by DIRCO. Okay. Then importantly in 2007, and the GIAMA Act, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act, was passed by Parliament. Okay. And the objective of this Act is to provide for a uniform framework for the management of an immovable asset that is held or used by a national or provincial department to ensure the coordination of the use of an immovable asset with the service delivery objectives of a national or provincial department, to provide for issuing of guidelines, minimum standards, and respective immovable asset management by a national or provincial department. Okay. So basically, from our point of view, there are two key facts in play. The first one is that in 1999, by agreement, the custodial function of embassy buildings, chanceries, etc., was handed over to DIRCO from the Department of Public Works, and we accept that. We're not contesting that. Secondly, that in 2007, the GIAMA Act, which, by the way, is explicitly referred to in Clause 8 of the bill that we're looking at today, the GIAMA Act was passed, and it's a guideline for all custodial functions in terms of the management, leasing, disposal, or whatever, and applies, in our view, to set the standards for the custodial function for all departments. Okay. Right, now if we then turn to Clause 8, of the bill that's in front of us. It reads as follows. Clause 8 is the heading is assets. Notwithstanding the provisions of the Government Immovable Asset Management Act of 2007, or any other law for that matter, all immovable property utilized by the Foreign Service outside the Republic, any right in respect of such property and the management and accountability thereof must vest in the Minister of International, implied of international relations and cooperation. Okay, sub two, notwithstanding any other law, the minister may on such terms and conditions as he or she may deem fit, acquire and dispose of, and lease, rent, maintain, and so on. Okay. The clause 12, if we go to clause 12 of the regulations, the minister, meaning the Minister of International Relations, may make regulations regarding any ancillary or incidental administrative or procedural matter that it's presumably that is necessary to prescribe for the proper implementation or administration of this Act. Okay, now there's several issues that we have a concern about. The first issue is the one that presumably has one is already strongly implied, that the Minister of International Affairs can't escape, can't be outside of the GIAMA Act. Nor can the Minister of Public Works. The Minister of Public Works is the custodian for lots of buildings in South Africa and for some buildings outside of the country, not under DIRCO. And we're obliged, the Minister and the Department is obliged to observe the rules and standards laid out in GIAMA, and that would apply to any other minister or MEC, provincial MEC, who has custodial functions in regards to buildings and so on. So we think that it's problematic that the bill currently seeks to place exceptionally the Minister of Foreign Affairs outside of the army. Okay. And we think it would be wrong. The second problem, okay, is which we flagged under R3.4 in the memo that we've got, if you go back again to clause 8, sub 1, the second last line there, it says that any right in respect of such property and the management and accountability thereof must vest in the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation. Okay. Now, the word vest is wrongly used here, where we say with respect. Because basically, since the interim constitution, which is then further embodied, the interim constitution of 1993 and then embodied in our 1996 constitution, is that the word vest means ownership. Okay, it doesn't mean custodial function, it means ownership. That's how it's interpreted in law, and that's how in the constitution it's interpreted. If you turn over page to our thing, furthermore, the Chief Registrar of Deeds has subsequently issued directives that state land may only be registered in the name of either the national government of the Republic of South Africa or the relevant provincial government, Gauteng or Western Cape or whatever. Okay. So the Minister of Public Works, for instance, no property is vested in the name of the Minister of Public Works. The Minister of Public Works is the custodian, exercises a custodial function over, but the ownership vests with the national government of the Republic of South Africa. There are properties in the Western Cape, for instance, and there would be an MEC, perhaps the Public Works and Roads, who has the custodial function in the Western Cape of those buildings. But the ownership. may well be bound or should well be bound by other laws as well, which might include things like the PFMA and so forth. So you can't have a reference to say, notwithstanding any law, the minister can do X, Y, and Z. So we think it's problematic in the drafting and in so many respects. Okay. That's the substance of our concerns with the bill. I can add one further issue, which relates to the memorandum on the objects of the Foreign Services Bill. Okay, so that's paragraph 3.8, and one finds the memorandum on objects towards the end of the bill, if I'm not mistaken, where it says clause 8, referring to the clause that we've been concerned about. The minister with the powers to clause 8 provides the minister with the powers to dispose, lease, or rent the immovable assets of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation within or outside the Republic. Okay, so that's a further jump in the memorandum on the objects. Sorry, Chair. So if you go to it's 3.8 of the memorandum. Objects of the bill. So I've also got lost. I'm looking at the bill itself. Let's just get the joint reference. Yeah. So if you look at the bill itself, it's on page 8 of the bill. And it's 3.8. Okay, clause 8, referring to the clause within the substance of the bill, provides the minister with the powers to dispose, lease, or rent the immovable assets of the department within or outside the Republic. Okay. Now, clearly the 1999 decision and directive refer to the custodial function of the minister in terms of properties abroad. Okay. Which, as I say, we accept. Clause 8 doesn't refer to properties inside the country, but suddenly in the memorandum on the objects of the bill on page 8 of the bill, even property inside of the country seems to fall within the custodial functions of the minister. Okay, and that surely is not right. We have no dispute with custodial powers lying with the minister outside of the Republic. Okay. Inside of the Republic, that's a core function of the department, so of the Department of Public Works. So our core function basically is to be the custodian of government properties, national government properties, whether it's prison, correctional services, or police, or union buildings, or parliament. We have a custodial function in that respect. That seems to be unintentionally, we would say, smuggling in a further scope creep. Okay. So, Chairperson, to the best of my ability, with one eye functioning, those are the concerns that we have. And we, just to really underline, we're not challenging the custodial function as agreed back in 1999 of the minister and therefore the department in regard to your properties outside of the country. It makes sense, actually. Just, you know, we're stretched enough, as you know, from your experience with this in Parliament and so on. We don't need to exercise our custodial function, so we don't have a problem with that. But but the vesting issue is problematic. It's the wrong word. Custodial function needs to be the word. And we can't exempt the minister from the Giama or simply by fiat any other law that's inappropriate and exposes the minister to problems. So thanks very much for the opportunity and thanks for squeezing us in a bit ahead of time. I've beaten my officials, so I think they're still on their way from the airport. But anyway, thanks very much, Chairperson. Thanks to the committee.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister, and the areas to which you have drawn our attention. importantly.
Thank you. That's pretty clear. Makes sense. What I would want to know is how much have the departments collaborated here, and have this been put to the department or the drafters, and what was the response, and why would we get it before those what are almost technical issues before they've been taken care of? Thanks.
Mukalapa.
Thank you, Chen. I think the Deputy Minister has sufficiently highlighted the concerns of public works very well noted. I think it's a very fair technical point, because it goes to issues of technical wording in terms of vesting and custodianship, which is a very valid point. Very technical, but it's got deeper meaning. So first and custodian has got very serious legal interpretation. So I think you have made very sound comment, and I think it's something that we should note, Chair, when we proceed with the team to the bill moving forward. And I think mentioning the issue of Kiama, because of you giving us the ammunition, I think the question that I have mainly for the department, because of then I would want them to highlight what do they mean when they say notwithstanding the government global asset management act, and then hence contradict themselves by saying vesting, because of they should have known that when they include Kiama, it means their legal interpretation would be custodianship. But it's a technical point, but in my book, I think you are raising a valid point that we should be taking with the department. And thank you for it.
Thank you, Honorable Raputi. But it was supposed to be Maputi again.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, for really outlining, you know, those, terms and all, because English is too broad. Custodian first, what? So, but thank you very much, and also, you know, outlining this Kiama Act, it really brought some sense to us, meaning that. The Minister of International Relations, she is accountable and responsible in, but she, the whole custodian lies with the government, as outlined in the JAMA Act. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honorable Raputi. Our Deputy Minister and your officials, thanks for coming. I don't have many questions, but I do want to make just a small comment. And it is that sitting here as a committee and sitting here as parliament, what is striking to us is that the bill comes from cabinet. It's department, but it's now released by cabinet. And all the ministers would sit in cabinet. And one would assume that they have agreed that the bill can go out for public comments. And the department outside cabinet makes this very useful, clearly very useful witnesses and comments that must be ironed out between the department and the department. Publicly, I mean, internationally. external relations and the public works regarding these specific issues. Now, what it says is that in cabinet, it is very possible that either there was no prior engagement between the two departments before cabinet okayed this, and therefore it escaped the attention of cabinet, and cabinet thought, okay, the objects of the bill are this and this and this, fine. Because if I were just to make a comment, it is that the Department of Public Relations, its principal objective is the formulation of policy, make sure that it takes into account the national interest of the country, including all other things like Vice President. That's the principal objective. But the principal function or objective of public works is property. Largely, it's 99% property. Now you see, and you can see that now people who are actually given the principal responsibility of dealing with policy now also kind of usurped or encroached the territory of property, something like that. So I'm just saying, to the extent that this document was released by a cabinet, what it may mean is that there must be an engagement between the two departments. And after that, the attention of cabinet must be drawn to this. So that when you come back to make a presentation to us, we say we met the department. And I must also explain the obvious thing why I'm saying cabinet. It is because if the two departments can't find one another, if public works says, but look, there's Kiama, and the other department says, there's PFMA. So this, any other law, the formulation is problematic. And the ministers or the officials don't find one another, or the legal advisors don't find one another. Cabinet or cabinet committee, or what cabinet must adjudicate. We will say, the two of you, what about what I'm saying now? How do we navigate this? But what does cabinet say? Something like that. Then there was also the issue about the issue of disposal. But it is not. It is almost the same as what I've said. Because if a department is responsible for ownership of property on behalf of cabinet or the country, then the issue of disposal, which involves so many processes, and renting, which also involves so many things, or building, and the specification also involves many other processes. If the department is given that responsibility, then it must say to cabinet, it must say to the South African, here are the things that, or the processes that we follow in order to do that. Now, that responsibility goes to another department, as clause 8 suggests. Then it does also mean that the same responsibility, I'm not sure if you can change them, must also be given to the other department. Now, if anything wrong happens and you are scoper, you must know ultimately who was responsible. Because things may happen, things that might have to go to court. So that tarification of renting and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it takes me into the last point now, which is the chancery that we have outside the country. The chanceries that were actually built by government. They are used by the ambassador and his staff or her staff, but custodianship is principally owned by Delco or principally owned by Public Works. If it were to be sold, who would do that? I'm not talking about the ones that must be built now. In fact, those that have been built many years ago, they are nice and very big. Those that I've seen, at least. So that is just another gray area, because that we're using this office or this place here does not mean that we own it. So that gray area for chancery might have to be clarified. I just thought I must not say those things. And we can allow Deputy Minister to make a comment, and then we can revisit and get the next department over to you. Unless there will be follow-up questions.
Yeah, sure. Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the members who've raised issues. Basically, the Honourable Dudley's question was related to your first issue, Chairperson, as well. Ideally, obviously, as I said at the beginning, departments and ministers, and for that matter, deputy ministers, when there's legislation of this kind, should consult, should collaborate, and should seek to find consensus. And to be quite honest, I'm not sure what has gone wrong in this case. As I don't want to point fingers, it could well have been the Department of Public Works shortcoming. And perhaps other departments, Home Affairs and others that are also affected, you know, may have had a different experience. I suspect that one of the issues that, perhaps I should explain, the Deputy Ministers had the pleasure of not being in Cabinet, so I'm not a Cabinet member, but a lot of legislation gets processed through Cabinet committees, with Cabinet basically signing off on what has been processed. In cabinet committees, but also in DG clusters. And one of the complexities, which perhaps explains some of the problems we're having here, is that the clusters and the cabinet committees that the Department of Public Works is in we're not involved in the international cabinet committee or DG clusters and so on. We do obviously collaborate with numbers of issues, and we've recently been engaging around the Pan-African Parliament issues and other challenges related to it. So we collaborate clearly, but it's possible that is part of the explanation for why we are arriving here in Parliament and before the Portfolio Committee with clearly different perspectives coming from different departments. But we will certainly obviously seek to engage our counterparts in DERCO. But as I said at the beginning, don't await for the executive as Parliament. You have parliamentary powers. And as a portfolio, and as I said when I chaired the Transport Portfolio Committee for 10 years, I've frequently encountered differences between different parts of government and so on. And that gave us useful work. We could do useful work as Parliament. And not just, you know, stamp off on what one particular Department of Transport is saying, when in fact public enterprises had some other views speaking on behalf of Transnet and so on. So we will certainly obviously engage as a matter of courtesy, amongst other things, with our counterparts, both at the official level and at the ministerial level, to explain what we've raised here. But at the same time, you know, don't wait for us to come back at a third, or, I mean, if you want to call us back, that's fine, but don't wait for us to come back. I mean, you as a committee, have all the powers to decide on the validity or otherwise. You are the legislators, we are not, we table legislation, but but we apologize, and we could well be, you know, partly responsible or entirely responsible for not having sooner picked up the concerns that we've got. Then to deal with more specifically with the issues, just to say that I also didn't, you know, took me some months to work out the difference between custodianship and vesting and ownership and so on. So when I arrived in the Department of Public Works under the cloud of a kindler, so I was rather distracted from the more detailed issues. But yeah, so the practice is obviously that vesting means ownership, okay? And custodianship means that this or that minister and department, or MEC and provincial department, has a responsibility for looking after the property. And we are the custodian of lots of property in South Africa, and Durco is the custodian of property abroad, basically, that relates to Durco's function. But the ownership of the Minister of Public Works doesn't, nothing is vested. Before 1993, before 1994, there was vesting the Minister of Agricultural Affairs. There was, so individual, it was as if individual ministers owned property, which is problematic, clearly. And we've done away with that notion of individual, you know, I mean, obviously it was, yeah. So national property, which would apply to chancelleries and things like that, is owned by the national government of the Republic of South Africa. That's the owner. That's where the vesting has happened. The vesting, yeah. And vesting means, basically, is recognized as ownership. Okay. So the question as to who, the question that you asked, Chairperson, who owns the chancelleries? Neither the Department of Public Works, nor DOCA, nor the ministers own it. It's the Republic of South Africa, national government, that owns them. Custodial function is exercised on behalf of the national government or a provincial government, when it's a provincial government. So, that's, so we're not fighting over turf at all. I think there was back in 1990 a bit of a fight as to who would have the custodial function of properties abroad, but that's been settled and we accept it. So Durko is the custodian, no problem. And it makes a lot of sense in our view. Okay. But the custodial function, then, regardless of which minister it is, or MEC it is governed by law, okay, which would include critically Guyana, that 2007 legislation, okay, which describes the responsibilities, sets the standards, and regulates the life, full life cycle of a building, if it's a building, in regard to the custodial function. So it would include acquisition, leasing in, leasing out, maintaining the building, and disposing of it. All of those things are covered by Guyana. So the Minister of International Relations can, for instance, dispose of a chancellery. Okay. But the money wouldn't come to the minister. It would come into the National Revenue Fund, okay, and the same is for the Minister of Public Works disposes of property. And the way in which that disposal happens, or leasing out happens, or whatever happens, it is governed by law and needs to be governed by law. The Minister of Public Works can't make up a law to say, well, notwithstanding the armor, this is how I'm going to handle the leasing out of this or that building. The Minister of Public Works can't do that, nor can the Minister of International Relations. Okay, so I hope what I'm saying clarifies what I'm trying to say. The and you're absolutely right, Chairperson, that you know, if existing laws are not followed, then it exposes the minister to SCOPA and other inquiries. And that's why it's important to get the legislation right in order to protect, in this case, the Minister of International Relations. Okay, so I hope that I've engaged with the issues the colleagues have raised. Yeah. But
We do, however, advise Honourable Deputy Minister that the legal services department meet, and then after that they advise their political principals, and as you also correctly advised, we will call we'll call you again, so that hopefully by that time that clarification will have been sought. We did invite the department. The DERCO was supposed to be here to take note.
yes, this is the process of parliament, but through the PLO, who must always be here, who was supposed to be here, well, I did not deal with the item on apologies. Perhaps there is an apology, so that they note, because we are noting for ourselves, they're supposed to note for this. It's a weakness on their part not to know who is saying what in what area.
To be out of order, I'm surprised and shocked actually that there's not direct representation at the very least at, you know, at an official, senior official level. Certainly in public works when we deal with the legislation like we were dealing with the expropriation bill, you know, as a deputy minister and the minister we sat in. Now I know that DOCA ministers are out of the country a lot by ex officio, but one would have expected at the very least but hey, you're the legislator, so make the legislation. But we do, Chairperson, we do undertake to meet with the colleagues, and my official, you know, arriving probably in 5 minutes' time. It's unfortunate that there aren't legal staff from DOCA here present, because my legal colleagues are arriving any minute now, and I will certainly ask them to be. I think they have been, you know, having now woken up to the fact that there is a bill. But if you want to call us back, we're more than willing to come back, by which time I'll be able to see out of both eyes, probably, and we'll make more sense, hopefully.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. And you can be released either with all the officials or yourself. It's up to you, and your officials, when they arrive, and they can still sit, but they are no longer going to present. Yes, we've done this for the department. But to listen what other people are saying regarding this particular bill, they are also free to sit. Thank you very much. With that, we are in. You want to come back?
Minister, and every success of his procedure.
Yeah.
We closed the GO in difficulties and there is a procedure involved and we wish you a good success.
Can I summarise for them in your presence, or is it wasting your time? You prefer for us to get
out. Good morning and welcome. And the apology was tendered by the Deputy Minister that you were coming in this morning. And but he has already made the submission, and he says he wants to summarise it for you. Over to the Deputy Minister.
It's also that the answer that they, and then you can also confirm whether my summary is actually what was being presented. But essentially, one was following the briefing document that the colleagues had been responsible for, and presumably there's a slightly refreshed version of it for the committee, which won't differ. And essentially, we were pointing out that the custodial function back in 1999, in terms of properties abroad under DOCO, that custodial function had been shifted to them, and that we accepted that reality. But we had problems with clause 8, sub 1 and 2, which appeared to exempt the Minister of International Relations from the Guyana Act in regard to that custodial function. And indeed also refer to any other, notwithstanding any other legislation which might include things like the PFMA and so on. And we thought that this would expose the minister to potential serious problems in the disposal of properties and so on. So that's the substantive concern. We also pointed out that the word vesting is misused. Vesting means ownership, and practice since 1993 with the interim constitution and that carried forward is that vesting means ownership, and when one's talking about national property or provincial property, it's vested within the government of the Republic, national government of the Republic of South Africa, and or a provincial government, Western Cape government, and that the custodial function needs to be distinguished from ownership vesting. So no minister, including the Minister of Public Works, own buildings and so forth. And then the third substantive issue that we raised was in the memorandum of the objectives of the bill, which appeared then to start to include not just properties abroad, but properties inside of South Africa as well. And we said that this was a mission creep in terms of the 1999 agreement, which said, yes, custodianship with DIRCO for properties abroad, but DIRCO accommodation and so on, you know, the custodianship is not this. It is with the Department of Public Works, as with other departments. So I hope my officials are in agreement with that. It's through you, Chair, sorry. You see, the deputies need to be monitored by their officials because they can help in weird directions.
Yeah, well, I was a school principal sometimes, so that, is it a great? People have no option not to.
To convey to them the point that you made, Chairperson, which is the Chairperson is still urging us at a ministerial level, but also at the official level, to engage our colleagues. In DIRCO specifically, so that we, you know, I urge them to not wait for us to reach consensus or agreement. I think we will. I think it's fairly straightforward on these matters. But they in turn urge us to. So if we could even use your time here now, I'm not sure because unfortunately there's no representative no official representative of DIRCO present, which is also surprising to speak out of order, but yeah, I just thought it would be important to, and you may well call us back at another point, and obviously we'd be more than willing to come. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much, DM. The next department is Home Affairs, and well, there was something they said earlier on. Now we want to hand over to you and to also explain. The Deputy Minister promised me to be here by 10:30 when I conferred with her inside Parliament. But over to you. And of course, you also need to introduce yourselves. This is one thing that I forgot. Deputy Minister, we didn't do the right thing. I only introduced you, but we didn't say who are the other colleagues. And their responsibilities. Sorry about that. It's my omission.
Good morning, Honourable Deputy Minister, Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee and the colleagues. My name is Thando, my surname is Wababa. I am in the office of the Deputy Minister of Public Works. Thanks very much.
Good morning, honorable members, honorable chair. My name is Mandisa Fakela Lindi. I'm the acting DDG responsible for police, Department of Public Works.
Thank you very much. For our records, because this is an important consultation process, Nomantosa, do ensure that it was kept. Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Home Affairs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Nuzami Nyanza from the Department of Home Affairs. I'm the Acting Chief Director for Foreign Office Coordination, which means that we take care of all the Home Affairs functions and manage them in all the regions where we are represented, but also to take care of the mandate. Nonza me. N-O-N-Z-A. Yes, sir. Nyak. M-N-Y-A-K. I'm with Advocate Moses Malakate. As I was saying, Chairperson, I am responsible for the Home Affairs official in foreign missions, in South African missions abroad. And at this stage of the inputs, regarding the inputs that were submitted from Home Affairs, we would like to submit to the Chairperson and the committee that the inputs that were laid or submitted were not officially or approved by the minister. And the request that we would make as the official that these inputs be withdrawn until they are approved by the minister. I think what we were instructed to do was to come to the committee based on the preliminary inputs that were submitted. But the request right now is that these inputs be withdrawn until such time that there is proper communication from the minister's office.
So the first one is that there was no engagement within the department by the legal services with the political principals. That's the first thing. And therefore that the inputs that received be withdrawn. And then we must invite you to come back. Members, I'm sure you have them. Honorable Rafuti, followed by...
Yeah, thank you very much. I think it's fair and I think it's acceptable. Let's wait for the principal to engage on the matter. And given that, as they have requested, let's agree on that. If other members agree, I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Rakut. Honorable Mukhalaba.
Thank you very much, Chair. Much as one would want to avoid fruitless and wasteful expenditure, for officials to fly over here and nothing happens. But in light of what we just discussed with Public Works, I think it will also be prudent to give Home Affairs the same assignment in terms of them consulting internally between themselves and their principals, but moreover in terms of also engaging DICO in terms of the inputs that they have put across. I think because of the nature of this department is trying to build consensus in the name of national interest. So we would want you to engage DICO in as far as your inputs are concerned, because primarily you are the main department. You know, all these other departments are just sideshows, but the main one is yourself, because of work with you. You know, consular services are done by Home Affairs. So we would want you to also take the same approach as we did with Public Works in terms of interministerial discussions and interaction, so that when you come with consensus and almost agreement on the issues and the inputs that you've put forward. So we accede to your request, because
even non-official thing, it's a futile exercise.
And with that, thank you very much. You will then come back. Public service and administration, you introduce yourselves, the responsibilities, and then Hoi Kone.
Raised the issues that we intend to present.
Sorry, there are two beautiful ladies, and she said, how can you miss those beautiful ladies? sorry, introduce yourself.
Good morning, my name is Amukena Nipagoi. I'm the Legal Administration Officer within the Legal Services in DPFN.
Zamgelan.
Amukelan.
Good day, my name is Shamila Abrams. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer at the Department of Public Service Administration, Office of the DG.
Thanks for coming. Ms. Nandu, why call it?
Thank you. Yes, ma'am, we have raised a formal submission to the Minister, to the DG, and we have been instructed to make our presentations at this portfolio committee based on the submissions that we have provided for the DG and the Minister. So we come with a mandate to do so. Sorry? I think it's pretty challenging. We have, since 2013, been liaising with DISCO when this bill was being conceptualized. At the time, there were issues raised with DISCO, and there was some sort of lacuna in between, and I can't explain it myself because I was not part of that process, and how it got to Parliament. But recently, when it got into Parliament, there were issues raised at the Public Service Bargaining Council when we were alerted once again to the fact that this bill was now in Parliament. And we have then again started those consultations with DISCO. We have, prior to coming here, had engagements with them. We have also formally engaged with DISCO in terms of formal letters from DGs to DGs and so forth. So we are at the point where we are kind of in a little bit of a pickle, in the sense that DISCO is cognizant of the issues that we are raising, and I must say they've indicated they are amenable to reviewing the issues, but the dilemma is that the bill is currently in Parliament, and the powers to further amend the bill with the departments is somewhat limited. So bearing that in mind, you know, and DG has said to us, maybe this invitation that we've got from the portfolio committee, which is welcomed, allows us to raise these issues again with you as custodians now of this.
Yeah, you are done. You want to engage? Yeah. can present, we will say what you have said now at the end. Over to you.
We have had an opportunity in the recent couple of weeks to interrogate this bill, and I think we've done more interrogation in the last few weeks on the bill than we've done previously, which is unfortunate. We have looked at, and I've provided a presentation in your pack. We have had to look at, as an overview, I thought it was important that we articulate where we come from as the DPSA. So we've looked at what does the Foreign Service mean in terms of employees as envisaged in the public service. We've also looked at areas on the appointment requirements for employees under this proposed Foreign Service Bill and that exist currently under the Public Service Act. We also identified some concurrent powers that vest through this bill, which I'll deal with. And we've also raised issues on the labor relations and the collective bargaining issues that that we see that might be problematic. So to go into the content of the bill, we've looked at Section 2 of the bill, which defines what the Foreign Service is. And we noticed in Section 2 that the Foreign Service comprises of employees that are employed by the department, being the Department of International Relations, as well as by any other national department. Which then brings me to the fact that the Public Service Act, as we know it, if you look at what is defined as an employee under the Public Service Act, it is pretty much that. Which then means that employees employed under the Public Service Act are envisaged under this broad terminology of the Foreign Service, which then becomes a bit problematic because you have two pieces of legislation that deal with self-same categories of employees. The challenge with the way the bill is drafted is that on the first issue, if you look at Section 3.1 of the Foreign Service Bill, recognizing that the Foreign Service now comprises of employees which are public servants under the Public Service Act. If you look at Section 3.1, there is further criteria placed on the requirements for appointment. And it says that persons appointed to the Foreign Service must be citizens. And it also allows for the department to prescribe through their minister requirements for eligibility into the Foreign Service. And these self-same provisions exist within the Public Service. If you look at Section 10 of the Public Service Act, we go a little bit further in the Public Service Act where we say citizens who can be appointed into the public service as well as permanent residents. And we say that because there was a constitutional court decision that afforded permanent residents the same authority as and recognized permanent residents as citizens and gave them the same benefits. So the Public Service Act at that time was amended to include that, and now it seems the Foreign Service is again discarding the permanent residence. And there's no indication of why they do that, and possibly there is a reason, but it's not provided. There's also in Section 9, the Minister for Public Service and Administration is allowed to prescribe conditions of appointment. And again, that kind of places two pieces of legislation affecting appointments of certain categories of employees within the Foreign Service to be legislated through two different pieces of legislation, which is going to have challenges in terms of not employees not understanding which one they should be complying with, which one takes precedence, and so forth. There's also the issues of the powers of the Minister for Public Service and Administration that are envisaged under the Public Service Act, as well as those powers that now arise through the Foreign Service Bill that are given to the Minister of International Relations. If you look at Section 9 of the bill, it provides that the Minister can issue, and again subject to collective bargaining, a collective agreement, the Minister can issue policies, code and prescribe any matters of an administrative nature in respect of the Foreign Service. And again, the Foreign Service noting that they are employees under the Public Service Act, which means that the Minister can issue those, the Minister of International Relations can issue those particular directives. There is provision for the fact that before the Minister of International Relations issues these directives, there will be a consultation process between relevant departments. It doesn't specify which departments those may be or what process. And after consultation usually means not you don't need the agreement of the other minister. You can do it after you've consulted, but you ultimately have those powers to issue those directives. And if you look at Section 12 of the Foreign Service Bill, it further gives the Minister of International Relations the power to transfer members of the Foreign Service, the powers to determine conditions of service applicable to members of the Foreign Service. It deals with disciplinary issues. It deals with the adjustment of allowances, which currently dealt with under the Foreign Service Dispensation. It also deals with the secondment of employees in the Foreign Service. And then if you go further into the Public Service Act, you will see almost an overlap of those particular powers. And you'll find them in Section 2.2a. The way the Public Service Act is written currently, it applies to all national and provincial departments, all employees within those structures, to the exclusion of the educators and the services, which is your police services and your correctional services. But that exclusion of the Public Service Act to those particular sectors is limited only insofar as the sectoral legislation provides something different. So if the sectoral legislation does not provide for a certain area, then the Public Service Act applies to those particular employees in relation to those particular matters. And you'll see that currently there is no indication that this bill is going to be excluded from the provisions of the Public Service Act, which then creates kind of a dilemma. And if you look at Section 3.3, there are powers for the Minister for Public Service and Administration to issue norms and standards on, amongst other things. There's a whole list under Section 3.3, but I've just identified the ones that I think are important, which is your conditions of service, employment practices, and labor relations. And if you look at Section 3.5, the Minister of Public Service and Administration can again, similar to these powers that are vesting now with the Minister of International Relations, make determinations on any conditions of service of employees generally, and also determine allowances for particular categories of employees. So you will have a look at that. If you look to have an analysis of both the Public Service Act and the bill before you, you will notice that there's a lot of concurrency issues that arise, in specifically in regard to those areas that I've highlighted. You will see also that the Foreign Service, like I said, comprises of public servants, and Section 9 and 12 of the Foreign Service Bill appropriate very similar functions to the Minister of International Relations as that given in terms of the Public Service Act. There's also note taken of the fact, and this has been drawn constantly every time we raise the issue with the Department of International Relations, that they have built in mechanisms to deal with conflicts. We've noted the provision that they talk about, and it's found in Section 7, and it allows for basically your intergovernmental relations framework to kind of mediate between any conflicts that they have. And in our view, that's not good legislation. You shouldn't be creating through legislation powers that exist in respect of the same categories of employees, in the same areas of employment. You shouldn't have a dual system in terms of legislation. There's one further area which is not in your slide, but which I think is important to raise even at this stage, but I've highlighted it in terms of the powers that exist. In terms of the discipline, the transfers, the conduct of employees in the public service, these are already catered for in detail in the Public Service Act. And some of these powers vest with relevant ministers. They don't necessarily vest with the Minister for Public Service and Administration. In terms of discipline, there are processes. There's a code that's negotiated for employees in terms of which they will be disciplined. And that power of discipline vests with HODs. And the intention of the bill is to somewhat take those powers away from them without necessarily repealing sections of the Public Service Act or creating mechanisms to exclude those provisions insofar as they relate to employees, which is ideally what should happen, is that you shouldn't have employees dealt with under the Foreign Service Bill to the extent that these areas overlap. On the third issue, which is also something that has come quite strongly at the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, are the issues of collective bargaining as well as labor relations issues. Currently, conditions of service as well as allowances are negotiated at the Public Service Bargaining Council. The Minister for Public Service and Administration is responsible for conditions of service, and conditions of service include your leave and all of your other benefits. And with the Foreign Service dispensation, it relates to the allowances that are paid up to people that are based in foreign countries. So that's currently how it works in the public service and the role of the PSCBC in that regard. And in this bill, there's no indication of how going forward those issues are going to be resolved. Because currently, the Foreign Service is not recognized as, or not given recognition in any of those bargaining structures. So broadly, there's no indication of how, if employees or persons within the Foreign Service have disputes and there needs to be some sort of negotiation, because obviously you'd have to take into account the Labor Relations Act and the responsibilities that are placed on an employer. There's no indication of how that's going to take place. And we think that's going to be challenging if it's now taken away from the Minister for Public Service and Administration and put somewhere else without these issues being resolved. I think in conclusion, we believe that the bill is problematic to the extent that there are overlapping provisions between the Public Service Act and the bill that sits before the committee. And we are requesting that maybe these issues should be resolved either, like the chairperson has indicated, between the departments. Again, cognizant of the fact that the department is saying the bill is already in Parliament, also perhaps with your assistance, maybe the bill can be referred back, if that's necessary. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Naidoo. I will invite parties seeking questions and comments from their own honorable members. And Mokalapa wants to have the first bite. Mokalapa.
Thank you very much, Ms. Naidoo. In your last comment, you made very sweeping statement. You said you would request the committee to throw out the bill. Well, we are not going to do that. This is our baby. We got to move with this one. We just got to make sure how does it work. But, Chair, I think it brings the point why Honorable Dudley was making those comments initially before Public Service and Administration to make it, to say that we asked for a mandate. They've got their mandate from the department. But it seems as if intra-departmentally, they haven't consulted each other with DECOM. Because of the issues that you are raising substantially are very, very technical and pertinent, and I think it goes towards the issue of misunderstanding between yourself and DECOM. Because of the few talk of why they have come with the Foreign Service Bill, we understand why they want to have a foreign service bill. We've got a serious issue with labor issues when it comes to our diplomats in particular. But now you are transcending even beyond the diplomats to general employees of the department, which creates a dilemma as well. So our main focus and the main objective of why we want this bill is the regulation in terms of labor issues when it comes to the ambassadors, heads of missions. And you have made reference to when they say the members of the Foreign Service. Now it said the members of the Foreign Service would include members who might necessarily be Home Affairs attachés and Trade and Industry and Defense attachés, which is another dilemma. And it brings the point why the department should have been here. Because of, I think what the DTSA is raising is very technical labor issues that are practical. But our main focus here of the bill is just geared towards the heads of missions and ambassadors. And we recognize that there are other officials who are involved in that thing. And we knew that the bone of condition of contention would have come from the ancillary departments of Home Affairs and Trade and Industry and Defense. And then again to DPSA because of labor issues and collective bargaining issues. But in a final recommendation, Chair, it would also mean that the DPSA should go to the drawing board and engage DECOM. So I'm on this one. In my mind, I've got the understanding of what DECOM wants to do. And contrary, on the other side, I understand what DPSA is talking about when they're talking of Public Service Act. My thinking is that the Foreign Service Act doesn't take away the Public Service Act. Makes it to stand in terms of regulation of your normal employees. But this one is in the main to ensure that we regulate, because of that is where our biggest problems are. And I would want and urge you to engage from the department's point of view. Let your DG speak to the DG of DECO and legal gurus from your side to with DECO ones. We understand what they want to do, and we understand what you are raising. And I think the two acts are in concurrence. It's just to see where do we streamline them to make sure that one doesn't overstep the other one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kalam. Are there further takers?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. And I'm just asking myself, even
even if you did get the mandate, but it looks like the accounting officers, administrative director generals, probably they have not met on this issue. Because I think really you could have not brought this kind of challenges here. Because here, the Foreign Service Bill, it's a must, it's a prerequisite, we really need it. However, as I say, there was no more consultation and engagement on those kind of gray areas. Because if ever I'm being hired as an attaché, I'm going to be hired on the prescript of the Public Service Act, and I go there. The bargaining issues and all those things, it will be determined here in the bargaining council of South Africa. And it is only on those other issues, those other areas, where we need really to revise, because I cannot really understand when you say that the public service wants to have their own kind of collective bargaining in the public service. So, Chairperson, I think really it needs, with a time frame, more engagement, more consultation with functionaries, and also to be taken back to the interministerial, so that when it comes here, we can be able to, you know, finish with this document. But anyway, I'm happy to see young lawyer, young people here. That is excellent, you know, to expose them on such kind of issues and in Parliament. Thank you very much. You are very progressive. Thank you. And a young woman also. Amanda.
Now, where are the young men here? Because I want to respond immediately to this.
And the rugby player.
When Maput, you must mobilize young men. There's a takeover, very bloodless coup. Thank you very much. Honourable Dante, any observations?
No, just to agree that we would really want technical details to have been stretched out beforehand, because the sense that I get as well is that there's things here, we know what we're aiming at and what the department's aiming at. We want to make that possible somehow. So we want all of the legal wrangling to go on before we have to give, because we're not all lawyers, and we're not sitting in those departments, so we're not best placed for that. We're best placed in terms of what's happening on the ground, how it's going to be applied, whether things work, whether they don't work, what political things are. So if we've got to start by trying to get your job done, it's not a good place for us to start. So thank you. But at least we've had some insight, and that will be good. Thanks.
Ms. Mario, you got it clear. If I can summarize it for you, the same way like Public Works, it means the legal service of DERCO and the legal service of DPSA meet, and they advise the political principals. But you have done your work already here. And then we'll call you back, and then you'll indicate whether the political principal has been engaged and whether you have had an engagement with DERCO. But from our side, without DERCO, we still have to call you. And we have to make sure that DERCO in the next engagement is full time. Well, on a very light, no, before that, the acronyms that we have used on page 4, the powers of MPSA, without public service. You see that? And the Minister of International Relations, now, is it in cooperation? I don't know whether in the official documents we should write it this way. Who could have said DPSA and then say DERCO? And then when we write, then either in brackets we say minister or we say the minister of that. I know, because it's the, actually the department, but there are things that ultimately must be done at the level of, just for the consistency. But on a very light note, if our this department, I wouldn't worry about conditions and allowances, because you see, those that are employed offices outside the country, if Nehau or any other union calls for a strike, South Africa would indicate it's an international strike. It's outside the country. Maybe the ILO must deal with it. But that's on a light note. On a serious note, thank you very much. I see that very useful work. Serious thinking has gone into analyzing the bill, into seeing what is good about it and what weaknesses are there, and they are written down. I think we must thank you for that in the same way that we have said to the Department of Public Works. The Department of Home Affairs is now aware that these are the engagements that must get into this. The legal advisors on both departments and then the point health principals. In the very strict sense of it, and I'm going to confer with my colleagues about this, because this is the first discussion. We are going to confer just after we've released you whether we will or we should continue with the department if the department is not led by a deputy minister, if there is a deputy minister, or the DG. Any other person can still present, but it must be in the presence of this person. And it's for a good reason, because here you are dealing with legislation, and they must own up. And the DG is the kind of first person to advise the minister and the cabinet. So if at some point they say we don't agree with this, this is what's happening, our legal advisor, that and that. But I have not taken advice on this on whether what should happen. But just take note of that, because in the next letter that we give to you, we may or may not say, but you must be led at a particular level. And it is still present, by the way. Yeah. And with that, I on behalf of the committee want to thank you very much for flying in to Cape Town for this presentation. We have looked at the schedule of our work, and there's a lot of committee work on Wednesdays. So we thought, because we must expeditiously also deal with the work regarding the bill, we've got to have a seminar about the bill. We've got to travel outside the country to get best practices about from other countries about how they went about making sure that their foreign policy. That their foreign policy, their foreign service best serves their country and all of this. So we are going to embark on all of these processes. That's why we have had to take this as the first Friday. Whether we'll continue on Fridays or we'll go back to Wednesdays is another matter. But we want to thank you for presenting yourself.
but can we just